Name, Jason Horsley. Profession, Limitless. This is The Limitless, the podcast in between. You are now listening. You can walk an island way and you work all the rolling dust. Your eyes were staring at me while playing your guitar.
I came walking a long way just for another chap. Then I saw her in the crowd and I looked her in the eyes.
You read Prisoner of Infinity like way back.
Yeah.
And you had no interest in Strieber at the time.
Not got any now either. Hang on, let me just shut the cats out because they're going to drive me mad.
Okay.
You don't want me yelling at them again and bursting your eardrums.
No.
She's had one of them spayed and she's not allowed out, so she's gone mad. Yeah, so no, I didn't know about Strieber. I hadn't read Communion. I'm not a big UFO fan either. I sort of dismissed it, really. Then kind of tripped over the esoteric agenda and Zeitgeist, those kinds of movies. And I looked at Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton and kind of got deeper and deeper and eventually hit the UFO thing. I'm like, oh my God, there are aliens? That makes sense, yeah. Though. You know, it makes sense. There's crazy psychopaths that are running the world. It kind of... But other than that, no, I'm not...
So wait, it passed you by entirely, UFO alien abduction, that whole thing?
Well, not entirely. I'm an X-Files fan, you know, but I didn't put any stock in it as being real. Having experienced psychosis, though, and, you know, I've done ayahuasca and things like this, it definitely spoke to me, your writing, that it's the unconscious really projecting reality, and yet there's something using that projection. I found it very interesting that there's a both and aspect. You know, it is just us vomiting up our unconscious contents.
Hold on a sec. What's all that those weird sound effects?
That's the dog. Do you want me to knock him out as well? Hang on.
Well, I don't want you to imprison him, but it's definitely a lot of background noise.
is that better? He's quieting down now.
If he's quiet, it's fine, yeah, but it was like a train going by.
So. Yeah, it's a wooden floor, so it's like... So what were we saying?
Both and, did you say?
Yeah, you know, originally it was fairy mythology and then the UFO everybody's being abducted by. And although I haven't had any of that kind of experience of abduction, I have had experiences that made me go, what's going on there? For example, a long, long time ago, I seemed to get in touch with this entity. It had a little bowler hat on and it sort of danced around, making itself out of any object in the room. So it would sort of absorb into an object and then become alive. I forgot where I was going with this. And that was right. At one point, it started to change everything as though I was being sucked into another world. And I sort of went, no, and stopped it because of my fear. And I've always wondered what would have happened if I'd have gone with it.
Okay, so tell me more about this bowler-hatted entity.
It was very dark, and it had like a pinstripe suit, but the pinstripes were kind of like lights going through it, and it could meld into anything. It sort of looked over the top of the mirror, and I'm saying, are you female or male? And it changed both female and male. And I'm like, okay, you're both. And I used a lighter, and I was like, can you communicate? And it wavered the lighter, which I took as yes, and then stilled it. And I said, can you hurt me? It was a Zippo lighter. And I lit it, and he went, psh! And I freaked out and said, right, well, I'm not talking to you then. Went into my brother's room. I've just seen a ghost. I had these kind of like... Go on.
When did that happen?
That was when I was 19, so nearly 20 years ago, over 20 years ago.
And that was an isolate incident?
It kind of was, because I hadn't taken psychedelics, so I had no experience of that. And I hadn't had any psychotic experiences, although they came soon after that. But it was a very, it was a night where I'd had a lot of fun and I'd felt very free and uninhibited. And I'd been up talking all night to my brother, and I'd stayed up, and I was trying to auto-suggest to myself the next day, right, imagine myself putting everything away and tidying up and everything that I wanted to do. And so I was in a very meditative state, and I was just, there was a coat leaned over a stool, and as I looked at it, it started to transform and sort of dance around. And it did this horrible thing that gave me the nightmares. It sort of looked at me like that, with no face. So, yeah, that was the first ever experience that I'd had.
This was the same entity with the bowler
hat.
So it had no face.
It had no face, no features of discernible features.
Before we carry on, you might want to know, because you're going to find out if this is a podcast. The train I was hearing, it wasn't the dog, although I was hearing the dog too. It's your mic. When you speak, it creates this weird background distortion, which sounds like a train. So it's sort of an underwater train. It doesn't actually make it hard to hear what you're saying. It's just that it adds this weird kind of Twilight Zone effect to it.
So. Oh. Sort of live in the Twilight Zone. I've just had a wild 2 weeks, kind of psychotic 2 weeks, to be honest, which has helped me quit the weed. It's sort of gone. But it was, I would love to understand what's going on. I've been to hell and heaven and seen some sort of inside-out world where that's hell, the shadow of heaven, and it's all one thing. I can't even explain it any better, what I've seen. I'm sat here just like, what was that? What, will I ever know, or is it just my crazy head?
So what I'm thinking now then, based on various factors, is we should carry on talking. We'll carry on recording anyway, but probably not for a podcast. And then, because I'm thinking two things. One, this sound is very weird, and we probably want to address that. And two, you've just gone through something quite intense, and so it might be good to focus on that and not be thinking, oh, just I'm doing a podcast now.
Trying not to think about that. Anyway, it's not really in my head. So I'm sure you'll edit it to your specifications anyway. But if you want to go back to Prisoner of Infinity.
No. I think it's best to do this. And then I didn't know that you'd just come through something as well. So if you want, we can just talk about that. And
that'd be great. I'd like some perspective.
Okay, so tell me what happened.
Well, I got some super strength weed that I thought was just awesome. I felt so embodied. I could feel all parts of my body, and I was sort of really getting into the non-dual, you know, I am everything, and I was merging with everything. And then I'm not really sure what happened. I just couldn't sleep. And I had visitations. Started off, I'd done a spell for somebody who was going to prison, and he came up to me and asked me, in the astral, what's this? I've got 3 more years than I should have had because of your magic. Why did you do it?
Wait, did you really do a spell?
Yes, I really did a spell.
Okay, all right.
But it came out of my mouth was just, oh, ego, to look good. And I was like, and he was like, I don't believe it. I'm going to fucking skin you. So I was waiting to be skinned on the Monday. And there was another witch standing in the room just here, and I was going, oh, please don't skin my dog, please. And she's like, I'm going to get him out for you. And it was just, it doesn't sound much talking about it, but then he said, oh, well, you can choose how to die. And he passed me some radioactive plutonium.
So what kind of visions were these? Like, you were awake?
I was awake, and they were actually there, but in a sort of ghost-like form.
Mm-hmm. And is this unusual for you to have waking visions?
Like this, these were like an advancement of everything I've experienced before. Because I took myself out to the park because I was worried if I'm radioactive, I'm going to kill the neighbours, the dog, everything. So I tried to take myself to the park, right, thinking that I would die in the night. Something about facing fear as well and facing death.
Mm-hmm.
But in these visions as well, I sort of went to the primordium, So to see the original people, and there was something about the demons, the archons or the flyers, whatever, stole a human being and took their soul to incarnate. This sounds so crazy, I know, but it there were visuals and everything. And I'm part of this somehow.
Okay, let's go back to that. They stole a human soul to incarnate.
Yeah.
How did that work?
Because they envied humans by sodomy.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's how they were doing it. I'm curious about, I mean, even more curious now about sodomy, because that came up with the Pan thing, no? The recent podcast with Pan, and I don't know.
I'm about two or three behind. I haven't been able to focus on anything, really. I've just been trying to be very zen, because I'm watching all these destructive thoughts now. I've got this ability to see my thoughts without dope. Something's happened through this psychosis to me. So I'm just sort of like, oh, okay, so there's the suicidal thoughts. And although I feel them, I feel they're cutting, they're not, it's not happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is no me. It's just these random ticker tape thoughts or feelings that keep coming up in a sort of empty space. It's a bit terrifying because I don't want to work, I don't want to eat, I don't care.
So this has been going for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a deeper reason why I reached out to you then. Besides the podcast, so let's go back to the entity soul hijack thing. Like, what can you remember about that? Like, how it happened and how it was done.
I can only remember that I am both demon and human. So that this again, it sounds so horrible saying it. There's just no better words. That there are a strain of human that are both demon and human. But that it doesn't make any difference. It's how it happened. It's not wrong. Although I take a lot of guilt on for it because I must have abused a child at some point. I was so inflamed about Jimmy Savile, I nearly lost my mind. And so going through these psychoses like since then have all been about Jimmy Savile. Like, I'm him, I'm going to go to hell in his place, or he's trying to swap my soul. It's really... I'd love to know. I mean...
Wow. Okay.
Like maybe I was his mother in my last life or something. I looked up when she died. She died in 72, was it? So she died before I was born, 2-3 years before I was born. But that there's some link somehow in the blood.
Right. So this the Jimmy Savile thing has been going on longer than this recent spate of visions.
Yeah, I mean, I came across that with the thread on David Icke.
Mm-hmm.
It's a massive thread. It was, you know, 3rd of October. He's going to be revealed as a paedophile. And it came out 2011, I think, 2012, when it started. And I fell down and I just researched everything everybody put on there and just fell into this black space where I didn't want to be, in a world where this was happening so endemically.
Right.
So systemically that, you know, I've been touched by it. My grandfather was in the RAF, so when you did that podcast with Anne Diamond, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I thought, oh, God, there's another link. I don't remember. I only remember school. I don't remember home. When my parents split, when I was 5, my mum went to live back with her parents, my granddad being a paedophile, and I don't remember anything from being at home. I remember snippets of school for the 4 years we lived there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember anything from home, from staying in that house, the bedroom, anything.
And had you thought about that gap in memory as being anything strange or sinister previously? Or?
No, only since you sort of brought it up did I identify and sort of resonate and think, God, yeah, I'm a little bit like that. I mean, I know that he was, you know, fiddling me between the ages of sort of 8 and 12, where he said, when I said no, he said, oh, I knew you'd get shy on me one day. And it wasn't major, it was minor. But it makes me think, well, was it? Or was that a cover-up so that I remember the minor and not the major?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it sends your mind a bit crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But you were researching Jimmy Savile before I was talking about this stuff. So what about when you were just researching Jimmy Savile? Did that not lead to questions about you?
Yeah, definitely. I've had questions for a long time, but I didn't think of the amnesia. I didn't think, oh, gosh, yeah, I don't remember that. It was really you that brought it up, and I think, my God, yeah, I don't remember. Mm. It wasn't something that, because I have snippets of memories. You know, I've got memories from five. I can remember the school that I was at. I can remember being taken out of the school and being put in the other one when my mum moved away. But I really can't remember anything from home. No meals, no TV, no nothing, nothing. Mm. And I've often thought that there's something happened to me when I was a lot younger, something pre-language, you know, that something when I was a baby. But I don't know whether that's an implanted memory or a false memory syndrome. I'm just making that up to account for my craziness.
Well, it's not. You're not talking about a memory, though. You're talking about just a sense, right? An intuition.
A sense, yeah. That's a false sense that I've implanted from researching everything, and you know what I mean?
Well, I know what you mean, because I, of course, have the same doubt constantly. And there's even a school of bringing it back to the original thing, and I want to definitely go back to Jimmy Savile and the Flyers, but there's even a teaching now, people propagating the idea that these aliens are implanting false memories of sexual abuse in us.
I saw something that was very strange, that the thoughts that mind is mechanical and that these flyers are just mind. They don't have sentience or consciousness. They're just like a computer. Mm. And that these, they're like almost like filaments, like Morgellons in the body. Like they're taking over the body. Again.
What's a Morgellon?
You know the Morgellons disease, which is these fibres that are like nanofibres that are infecting the body, and people have these great big sores with these fluff and stuff coming out.
What's coming out?
Fluff.
Fluff.
Yeah, look it up, Morgellons, Morgellons.
Right. So carry on, yeah.
So the flyers are everywhere. They're like in nanotechnology everywhere. Again, I know this sounds utterly bonkers, but they're mechanical. I mean, as Castaneda said, it's the Gnostics, isn't it? Let's say they were mechanical and they can only imitate.
It's like,
and they implant thoughts, literally. Mm-hmm. You can feel them. On psychosis, I can feel them moving around in the body. I don't know, again, how much I'm just hallucinating. Mm-hmm. But I find these psychotic experiences really interesting. Frightening, terrifying, but they're so interesting.
It would be very strange if they were dull, I think.
Yeah, well,
there's a lot there. I mean, they don't sound bonkers to me, but then you probably would expect me to say that. It does seem like you're tapping into something, and then, of course, the problem is that we're using our mechanized mind to then interpret it.
And I can only remember fragments because it was so full. Every second was so full. Mm-hmm.
So are we talking about the last 2 weeks again now?
Yeah.
Right. So all this has been getting downloaded.
And it seems to get more, I seem to get more clarity on it each time it happens. You know, they're more clear and more, I'm more able to interpret them rather than them just being weird. You know, I'm walking down the road and everybody in the world knows that I'm Jimmy Savile. I've got his soul. So I've got to die for what he did. Makes no sense. This time it's like, oh, well, if you go back to the primordium, you know, you're a demon wearing our daughter's soul.
Slick and slimy feel of a wall that never peels. Humans use it all the time, well good for them. I can't use mine cause Julia's brains will plaster the walls. Julia's brains will plaster the walls. action made her hair like a rag doll's. Sewing up the lips at the madman made eclipse of her papa in the light of the hall. Come to plaster her brains on the wall. Julia's brains will plaster the wall.
So yeah, let's just try and describe a bit more about this primordium and this process by which mechanized mind somehow hijacks the soul in order to incarnate.
Can't really. That's the best I can do. We were black. The humans were all black. As in Negro. And they envied their creativity, so they wanted it, and they found a way to steal it through trauma, through sodomy, and
through getting humans to sodomize each other.
No, through astral, I suppose, some sort of astral rape, because they seem to be slightly out of phase. I mean, this isn't making any sense. I'd love to make sense of it. And I think that the first human went to the demons as well, out of curiosity, a child. It's crossed over. I mean, again, I don't know how real it is, but...
Well, I mean, when you talk about them being like computer programs or nanotechnology, that does suggest something that's not... that has been created.
Yes, but they're not the nanotechnology. That's how they're here. They're in the astral sort of energy, a sort of mind. Like I was going to ask you, you know, you talk about the psyche dislocating from the body. Well, where is it when it's not in the body? Same place they are. They're then hijacking the body. I mean, I'm saying there. Is it just we've made up these egos that hijack the body, or is it that the ego is their mind? They've given us their mind.
Which is Castaneda's view, yeah.
Yeah,
and... Yeah, so this is certainly perhaps the central question that Prisoner of Infinity is wrestling with, that I'm wrestling with, is Is it all the psyche? Are these demons and these external non-human agencies that seem to be interacting with us, are they the result of a fracture of the psyche, that some reality that's already there that we're able to access and that's able to have access to us through the fracturing of the psyche, or are they actually the fragments of the psyche?
Good question. I mean, as I was reading that, I came up with a question that, you know, we are everything. There is nothing outside the all. So almost makes no difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose, you know, we want to know scientifically, don't we?
Well, mentally. I mean, isn't it maybe a trap? So we're trying to think about the thing that is enslaving us using, you know, the thing that's enslaving us. So it may be futile.
I also had a vision that this thing wants to ascend.
Mm-hmm.
If you watched Stargate, Stargate, you probably haven't because it's quite crap, but there is a good, there's a few little good sort of stories in there. For example, they've got the Ascension, and Anubis, he's a Gua'ul, which is a little worm that goes in the back of the human's neck, and it controls them and gives them glowing eyes and superpowers and such things.
Right.
He tricked an ascended master into ascending him to a certain point, which completely fucked up the whole... you can laugh, but something like this is what they're after.
That's why I'm laughing. Because it makes me think of Streber and Kripal. And
yeah.
The whole game that's being played.
Because they need energy. And they're frightened. If everyone ascends, what the fuck are they going to do?
So, yeah, this does overlap with the Greys and the mythology of the Greys, and even different ways in which Streber's described it, which is that they were a race that reached an evolutionary dead end because they'd engineered themselves into technological kind of immortality, but basically there was no such thing, of course, and so they're trying to coattail their way, or kind of sneak their way out of this trap by riding on our consciousness in some way.
And as far as I can tell, this is kind of very scary to the ascended beings.
Well, they're not
because
very.
It can happen.
They're not very ascended if they're frightened of little gibbering gremlins, really. I mean.
But I think what I saw is if they do get through, they lower the whole thing. It could just explode. I also got the idea that God wants to end this entire experiment. God, in inverted commas. Mm-hmm. That, you know, those that have ascended, they want to cut it off and get rid of it because it could destroy all of creation, like the xenomorph, if it ever got out.
Right.
It would just eat everything.
Yeah, well, I think this is a mental construct, this fear. I mean, fear in general, I guess, besides being a biological function, we need fear to survive in the predatory universe, but as far as it being, I mean, this isn't a biological fear you're describing, this is a transcendental fear, so I would say this is a mental construct in itself. The flies give us their mind, and their mind is a fear-based mind. So then that is a diabolical trap. But the idea of God being destroyed by some glitch in the system he created doesn't really add up.
Perhaps not the God, but this little bubble of the universe, this little sort of XY axis, as you called it.
Mm-hmm.
If they get through and eat that, it'll just all be black, and then it could go into all of creation. And it's like God's got to go, we're going to put a quarantine on that, you know, we've got to actually destroy it.
Well, but it doesn't...
We let one get through, we saw the damage it
doesn't add up, really, because what we're imagining here is a system that's somehow been infiltrated. But the system we're talking about is the totality. Is everything there is. There's nothing outside of the infinite, so how can it be infiltrated?
No, but
what we're talking about is a constructed identity, I think, essentially.
Or a disease?
Huh?
A disease?
Well, I mean, a disease is just part of the natural you know, balancing mechanisms within the biological, the whole biosphere is constantly striving for balance, and so that creates disease in certain, you know, packets of certain different elements of the biological system, but the whole system itself is constantly moving towards balance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But I mean, like, it just reminded me of radioactivity then. You know, this shouldn't have happened, in inverted commas again, because nothing can, shouldn't ever happen, mm-hmm. You know. But it has happened. Mm-hmm. It's probably going to wipe out half the globe, if not all of life. And Earth dead. So if these things could be likened to radioactivity in the larger higher realms, let's say fifth dimension or whatever you want to call it, it could possibly spread and blink out everything, time, history. And so so the higher beings are like, we're going to put a quarantine and stop it and kill it before it does spread and turn everything dead. There was something like this. I mean, again, it is mental. I'm trying to interpret the things I saw, and I'm not clear, and I don't think I should take any more drugs. And also, there was methadrome in my blood, which I couldn't have taken. I haven't seen anyone to take it. So it was either laced in the weed or it's been reawoken in my bloodstream from the last time I took it.
How did you discover that?
Because I got sectioned for 2 hours.
Oh. Yeah.
The police picked me up, and I'm going, no, I'm radioactive. Have you got a Geiger counter? They're like, do you know plutonium is very hard to get hold of, unless you're magical, which I didn't say, but unless you can materialise shit, you know?
So somebody called the police?
Yeah, some dog walker.
Because you were out on the street?
Because I was in a sleeping bag on the park going, no, stay away from me, please, I'm radioactive.
Oh. Well, so this definitely went to critical stage then.
Yeah, yeah. But it disappeared like that. I just had a shower and a sleep, a little nap in the hospital, and they were like, oh, we can discharge you, you're fine, you know your name and what day it is. So.
Right. So, and this was triggered by giving up weed or just coincided with it?
Well, I bought a quarter of really strong weed. I bought a quarter because it was really nice, and I was like, oh, this is in my, you know, I could really sink into my body and be in the present moment. But it was so strong I couldn't sleep, and then I started to have the visions.
Well, that's very interesting what you described, because that sounds like what it is that's feeling embodied is not you.
Mm. What would you say it is then?
Well, I'm just using what you're giving me, but based on all that stuff so far, it sounds like that's the thing that's
getting the demon.
Yeah, that's using the weed to rape you, to violate you, to enter into your body and take it over.
I want to tell you about a dream. It's a little bit TMI, but I wrote this one down because it was extraordinary. So I'm having a dream, and all of a sudden Eminem, the rapper, turns up, and we're married, and we both sort of know it. He looks a bit puzzled, I look a bit puzzled, and we get down to having sex, and it's a bit, and suddenly I've become lucid, and I'm like, I don't know Eminem, and I'm not married, who the hell is shagging me? So I look round, and there's this panel of kind of purple dark kind of lines on my back, and then I feel my face being squashed into the sofa, into the bed. I mean, I'm in my own room as well, I'm squashed, and I'm paralysed for about 3 or 4 seconds, can't move, then it goes, and I look round, and I'm in my bed awake. And that was about 4 days before all this. Now, just again, TMI, I've given up masturbation. For about two months, I've just stopped all of that, dreaming and thinking about it, because I recognise this is not good. And I had kind of wet dream, let's call it, erotic dream. And then a couple of nights later, this one. So you might be right. Because I'm getting onto it, it's having to then force me in my dreams rather than me willingly sort of dreaming up these things, these fantasies.
Right. And you mentioned purple.
Yeah, it's like a purple-black sort of bands of lines, and then I can explain it. I only saw it for a split second before it shoved in my head, and it was really clear it didn't want me to see it.
Because on a recent podcast, the same one that I talked about my vision, my experience waking up being anally penetrated by Pan, which was when I was 40, that I had this
I'm 40.
Vision. But on that same podcast, I talked about a dream I'd had just the night before we did the conversation, which was about being taken off by these beings into this realm that was purple, and the beings were going to keep me there under observation for billions of years, and they were going to provoke in me an orgasm that would continue to build over the course of those billions of years, just to observe. Well, I thought just to observe, but my Samuel on the podcast said it sounded like you were being harvested for your orgone.
Yeah.
So and
I had a similar one myself with the billions of years thing.
Oh really? And then Anne Diamond said something about purple, how it relates on the MK Ultra thing, that purple is total dissociation or something. I forget. I would have to find the quote. But anyway, she related the purple to the MK Ultra. Mm. And I think that we're probably better off kind of scrabbling back to a bit of ground in terms of, rather than trying to understand these narratives that you're uncovering or that are being downloaded through this, quote, psychosis, unquote, to look at, like, the model that Prisoner Infinity does present, and Cal shared, and which is, well, okay...
Can you give me that name? I want to look him up, but I can never actually tell what you're saying. Cal shared?
No, Cal shared. Well, it's in there.
How do I spell it?
It's in the Prisoner Infinity. He's quoted throughout it, right? That guy.
Okay.
Yeah. Donald Cowshed, The Inner World of Trauma. If you haven't read that, then you're in for a treat, because that will revolutionize your experience. So that model. So in terms of that, something happened to us when we were children involving some kind of sexual interference, some kind of major trauma, and of course we don't know what happened. We don't know how real or physical it was, but whatever, something happened that was sufficient to fragment the psyche in such a way that there was no way for it to actually land in the body, and that fragmentation went hand in hand with the dissociation, and dissociation is like an internal violence that we constantly are doing against ourselves to perpetuate the split and the fragmentation. But in return for that kind of unconscious self fragmentation that goes on, we get to access these disembodied realms,
right? Yes,
as a fragment. As a fragment. That's the thing. You see, the psyche may exist in a disembodied realm beyond time and space, which is why it wants to embody and be in a body to bring, you know, the two poles of existence together and in balance, and for the whole, you know, for God to experience incarnation, however we want to, you know, poeticize that. But that's entirely different than a fragment experiencing the disembodied realms, or the eternal realms, or however we're going to call them, the energetic realm of existence. Because when a fragment experiences it, it's not embodied. It is disembodied. So it's like without the body, there's no ground and anything goes.
Exactly. So you can't work out of these visions what is truth and what's, you know, being sort of channeled into it, because it keeps changing as well. So all the way through these last 2 weeks, I would have made sense and I'm happy with that, and then something will change it, like it all switches and it's completely the opposite of what I just thought,
right.
And it kept doing that, as though there's something trying to interfere as well. There was contact with a higher vibration as well. There were definitely beings trying to help, not interfere, but and also other people, you know, so spirits of people that I know sort of coming in. Also, my cats wouldn't leave me alone. Every night they slept around me. They never do that. So they knew something was going on. But, going back to what you were saying, yeah, it, it's their fragment, anything goes.
Yeah, so, because if you're talking about the infinite yeah. realms, then there's no forms in the infinite realm, because the infinite can't be packaged into a form, and it doesn't matter how many different forms you have, they're never going to encapsulate the infinite. So the infinite realm, by definition, is formless.
The non-manifest.
And so the only way the infinite can manifest and experience itself as form is through a body. So then there is this... it's kind of incomprehensible because it's beyond words, but the formless is takes form, and so although it's not limited to the form, it is able to experience itself as having form while still being of the infinite. And I think this is the psyche. The psyche is just its natural habitat is the infinite and the eternal, the soul, the psyche.
Do you not think there's like gradations though before you merge back into the non-born, unmanifest spirit? I mean, that's like the eschaton of our being able to understand. There seems this great big leap between form and non-form, where I see gradients and levels, you know, where we don't just disappear into the great ocean.
Well, I don't think it's about disappearing or reappearing. I think it's about simply being in two states simultaneously, being in the formless infinite and being that, while also being incarnate and experienced senses. So one is not there because there is no self, so there's no mental construct that's identified with the body, but there still is a body experiencing. It's a complete mystery, it's unknowable and inexplicable, but it can be experienced.
Right?
And
yeah.
I don't think there's gradations in that. It's like enlightenment is a journey of zero distance. When the body lands, the psyche lands, and then it's as if it was always there, because the psyche was always in tune with the body. It was always kind of, the experiences of the body were always being relayed to the psyche for the psyche, but the body itself wasn't able to experience that. And so there was but once it happens, boom, it's like,
But we still exist on an emotional level, an energetic level, a theoretic level. I mean, I don't know how many bodies
What I'm saying is, I think this is mind stuff. I mean, not that it's entirely unreal, but what I'm getting from, or trying to get from what you're saying, is that this machine technology mind thing, the flyer, this may be the constructed identity fragment that has managed to seize for itself some kind of immortality by refusing to get integrated. And if this happens over and over again over the millennium, then you get a whole population of these fragments that are basically saying no, to life, no to the infinite. But at the same time, they're envying bodies. They can't exist in bodies because they can't, because they're not souls.
And yet. Again, I mean, this is another mental story narrative, but I felt that in this vision that they had to incarnate. They have to. That's the only way through.
Well, I think they have to be integrated. I'm taking the optimistic view, but also because it just doesn't seem to make sense. And I come back and back to this. Like, there's a non-human element. There has to be, because the whole of, this reality is so inhuman and so against life. But there can't be a non-human level element, because we are everything. Like, the human psyche is a microcosm for the totality. And so anything that's outside the human psyche that's non-human would have to be outside God. And that doesn't... So I keep coming back to this, like, how to square that circle.
Okay, so what came to me then is that yes, the human psyche is everything. It's just consciousness. It's everything.
Yeah.
And yet, the cat and the dog, they're separate. There is a separation as well. So...
Well, their body. I mean, a different species.
But so the flyers are still us, but like you said, they're a fragment that refuses to integrate. Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems logical to me.
Right, but then you were just questioning that, because... It seemed like, well, they seem like so much more than that. And so I was just going to recount an experience I had.
But look at the ego. how that seems so much more than spirit.
Exactly.
But it isn't.
Well, the ego can seem like everything. It can seem to create its own world, its own reality, and make it seem like it's all there is, that there isn't anything else.
And I wrote here that, you know, the first thing that struck me was to turn the mundane into magical. And I think that's why I went in search of the mysticism, because the world seems so unbelievably mundane and mechanical, like there's something missing. So it has totally, totally made it seem like that's all there is, the material.
Yes.
I was born in that world that I believed it. Now I don't, but I did then. And I went on this whole crusade to try and find the mystical,
right,
which was completely...
Right, but that...
I want to believe, you know.
I mean, the mystical world has also been created by the ego. That's the thing that we're stuck in now, is recognizing that when you come out of the first matrix, you just go straight into the second matrix. And the second matrix is far harder to get out of than the first, because it seems like real, and it seems to represent, like you said, this whole gradation that takes us from the temporal local awareness to the infinite. We've got to take these steps, but no, it's a spiral staircase that just goes nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Very beautiful, very colourful, besides which the non-dual just be is boring.
Yeah, nothing for the mind to do, that's the thing.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to tell this story, because it may be relevant, that happened with my first partner when I was 35. And so I'll try and keep it short, but I think it's relevant. So we were sleeping together, and over a period of mornings, I could get woken up by her making weird sounds and weird stuff, and I was starting to get annoyed. And then one morning, I'd just woken up, and I was lying there, and I heard the sound of me clearing my throat. It was absolutely unmistakable. It was me clearing my throat. The sound, but I hadn't made any sound, so it was not coming from me. And I think maybe the sound woke Liz up or something. But anyway, based on this and a couple of other things that we know, we realized that there was an entity there that was actually fucking with us, that was actually trying to create strife between us by doing these weird little clever little tricks that didn't require a lot of energy or power on the part of this being, but just generate a bit of movement, a nudge here, a sound there, that we would attribute to the other. And basically I busted it by being awake when it didn't realize I was awake, and I heard it doing its thing. Like, that wasn't me. I know I didn't clear my throat. But as far as Liz was concerned, all she would have heard was me clearing my throat, right? And so we tackled it, and I can't remember how we did it exactly, whether it was an actual ceremony with incense and all the rest of it. I don't think so. Liz, this girl was very sensitive, and she was able to hear voices and whatnot, and so she was able to tell me what was going on while I was addressing this entity, and basically telling it had to leave and to get out. And I'm sure I was burning sage and all the rest of various shamanic things. But basically the main thing was me addressing this fragment, although we didn't think of it in those terms.
A fragment of you, or
well,
or
I don't know.
A fragment.
This is why I'm telling the story, because right. I haven't interpreted it yet through this lens. At the time, I was addressing this entity that had invaded our space and was fucking with us, and Liz was hearing its responses, and what she said was that we had made a pact with this being a long time ago, and that we'd all promised to stick together no matter what, and that it had got lost because it had refused to face the truth of itself, just to simplify, and so it hadn't been able to incarnate. And basically now it was floating around. The only way for it to live and to regain its
energy.
Self was through us. And it was pleading with us. We made a pact. You promised, you know, we yes. swore we'd never. And I didn't have any of it. I said, no, you have to go. You have to be recycled. You're not real. You're just... I don't know what I thought of it in those times. I didn't think of it as a fragment of my own psyche, but I thought of it as like an astral fragment of somebody who died. Probably something like that. Or maybe I thought of it as an inorganic being. No, I don't think I did. No, it definitely had a personal thing to it. So I thought of it as a sort of semi-sentient memory of somebody's life at that time. But anyway, I was very firm with her and said, you have to go, the contract between us is over, go into the light, or whatever I said. I wouldn't have said that, but anyway, my partner was describing the being was like screaming and this really high-pitched sound, and then I was being very compassionate with it too, I think. I was saying, this is the only way for you to be free. You have to actually let go of your attachment to who you think you are and to the past and everything, and just let the universe, you know, absorb you into it, something like that. Anyway, and it seemed to work. The being surrendered or submitted to what I was telling it, and it was gone. So now I wonder about that, like, how much is that an example of what may be happening, that there are parts of ourselves that are existing autonomously outside of us and that are trying to incarnate, as you put it, that really experience themselves as beings, but
like
that are
tulpas that start to become more than tulpas.
Well, the tulpa thing is funny, because it came up on the first X-Files, which is...
Oh, I haven't seen those yet.
It's terrible. Don't get excited. It's the most unbelievably terrible TV I've seen, because I try not to watch bad TV, but I was excited too. It's like the X-Files, but they're so awful, in my opinion. But they're in... I'm still watching them for research, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And the first one is all about how the alien thing is all human engineered. which is obviously interesting. And then there's the third one, the fourth one is about a seeming tulpa. And Mulder says, oh, the tulpa is a much misunderstood term. And he corrects the understanding somewhat of tulpa. And I think I just read this as well. Like, we have an oversimplified version of tulpa, of what it is. And I think this is quite key as well, because I think that the idea that we can, that the psyche can materialize, and certainly that we can cause our own thoughts to materialize, I think that's part of the hoodwink.
You don't think that's true?
I don't think that's true. No, I don't. You know, I'm on the fence about these fragments. Like, maybe they can, they definitely can seem autonomous, and we can experience them as autonomous beings. Maybe they can actually develop some level of material and leave traces, materiality.
Have you heard of the teratoma tumors?
No.
Well, these are tumors that grow inside us and start getting teeth and hair.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and there was it's in some crappy Spirit World 3 or something, where there's these mojos that jump in the body, like the little pieces of filaments that I saw, mm-hmm. that create tumors and want to create a body out of all the junk in your body.
Okay, so that this may be true, of course. This may not be true. It's very interesting. It seems plausible to me.
You can find them on YouTube, and they are horrendous.
Stigmata seems plausible to me, because, okay, like, if you've been sexually abused, one of the ways it comes back into memory is through somatic responses, right? So I've got, my butthole has given me problems for the last 10 years or so, and more and more I'm starting to see that as a somatic memory of being sexually abused.
Can I ask, it's a bit personal, but again, I'm just trying, because I resonate slightly, because I've never been able to, my bowel movements have always been bad, but I don't know whether that's just IBS, tension, stress, or Freud's anally retentive personality. Is it not that what you're talking about? You don't have to go into details, I'm just wondering.
Oh, you mean the actual specifics? Well, it's been very itchy for the last 10 years. I even did a blog post about it. But
right.
In the last few years, occasionally it will bleed, and I have to use very soft toilet paper and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, but also the bowel cramps. Like, I've been waking up in the night. It's not so bad now, but with really intense bowel cramps. It feels like I've got to take a shit, but I don't. And so that was the biggest clue, actually. But also the bleeding buttholes. Like, what's that about, right?
Yeah.
So I don't doubt at all that the body can itself manifest symptoms that are psychic in origin, that come from the psyche. Is, of course, why would that not be true? But I think it's a leap to then say that the psyche itself can materialize outside of the body. That would seem to be a leap.
I'm not sure as I see it that way. I'm more seeing it as the tulpa is created separate to the psyche, as an energetic blob, let's say. Then if it's mm-hmm. forgotten about because it's done unconsciously, you don't know you're doing it. So I fantasized my whole life. I could have created untold numbers of these things.
Sure. No, that's for sure is true. But a tulpa is something that can be seen, and that can even become physically present, and that others can see, right?
So then, but if we go to a level before that, before it quite manifests.
Yeah.
Because you've no conscious intent to do that. You've created a thought form that's kind of hanging around, invisible.
Right.
But like your friend, that made this pact with you.
Yeah.
Could that have been one of your invisible friends when you were a child, if you had such things hanging around?
Well, certainly it could have been from childhood, and that would be the way I would want to go now, rather than speculating on reincarnation and past life memories, even though I don't discount that, but I think it always start from where you are and carry on with what you know, and don't hop over anything. So
yeah, I like that about you.
so then I would have to I'd have to locate something in my own childhood in this life before I started leaping over into some past life thing, and it would be a match. It would be a recurring pattern, a reenactment. But then, so then I would say that if it was an invisible friend or that kind of phenomena, it would be trauma related, not just something that I imagined because I was lonely. It would be something that was a result of the psyche being fragmented through this trauma, and that energy of the psyche
splitting.
Yeah, being harnessed. I mean, but by others too, because this is, I mean, one of the elements in your vision that seems real to me, because it corresponds with other stuff that's coming out, is that by sodomizing, by raping somebody, and the trauma of that, you can
harness their
direct energy. And harness this energy, yeah.
Yeah. And leave a shell, because that's what I've always felt like a shell, like this. You know, I look at other people and they know what they're doing, and they're spontaneous, and I'm just mind. And I have to talk myself into doing everything, and having these psychoses, psychotic experiences, is what is starting to make me feel more whole as I don't know, encounter the unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
I feel each time more solid, more spontaneous, more real, as if parts are coming back to me.
So you're talking about in the last 2 weeks?
Every time it's happened, you know, there seems to be some, I call it a partial embodiment, something makes, I feel real.
Mm-hmm. But over the last 2 weeks, not the previous psychotic episodes.
Yeah, each time they happen, from being young, it's uh-huh. as though the insight has come into me.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than
what about the drug? Because they're drug induced, right?
No, some of them are. Yeah. The first one wasn't, and the one I told you about, the bowler hat, hadn't had drugs. I'd had a bit to drink, but way before, sort of 9 hours before.
So seeing something that we haven't seen before, let's say, you know, an aspect of the unconscious that was unpalatable to us and that got fragmented off and shut away, seeing it potentially is a way to integrate it, absolutely, and so that's a step towards embodiment. Not necessarily because it goes in the body, but I don't know how this works, but the whole of the psyche is the more the body is cleared of trauma, the more the psyche can descend. So there does seem to be something incremental about that.
Yeah,
I agree.
Sure.
It's not just an instantaneous thing.
Because dope's gone. Like my that addiction and the compulsion to use dope, gone.
Right.
You know, I'm really like, no, I want to get a clean headspace and get sobriety and see clean.
Mm-hmm.
See without all the props.
Yeah, because dope absolutely perpetuates that disembodied, everything goes state where the imaginal and the imaginary and the real are all, it's all a continuum.
Mm.
And it's not a continuum, I don't think, like.
I saw it as there is nothing unreal, no thought is unreal, no image, it's there in reality, whether it's a dream or a thought or a...
But there's a difference between a thought and an act. There's a difference between an emotion and, you know, a sound. It's not all just one blur, right? So if Whitley Strieber encounters an aspect of his psyche and he believes and writes books about how it's this whole other order of existence, and then that's not real. The experience may have been real, but the interpretation he's put on it is not.
And yet it is to him, so there is a reality to it. I mean,
but that's the trap.
That's the mind. Yes, it is. And you know, I wanted to say a minute ago, because what if these constructed identities don't die when the body dies? They float off because they want immortality, or they want to see heaven, or they believe they should go to hell, or whatever the narrative it is that they've constructed.
Yeah.
And so it goes off and does that, and they're floating around.
Right, that's what I was getting to, because they don't, I mean, what you describe, your experience matches mine, the ego doesn't have sentience.
No, it's just a load of thoughts and a bundle of feelings and
it's a machine,
ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a machine.
It's like a machine. Yeah. I experienced that on marijuana, funny enough, one time in Mexico, I palpably experienced my mind as a machine. It was fascinating.
Mm.
So then if the ego is a constructed thing that's like technology, defense against trauma, The only kind of sentience it can have is by interpreting the experience, the sensations of the body. That's it. I mean, emotions, but the emotions are really bodily too. If you think about it, anger, chemical responses, all the rest of it.
Yeah, but what if there's an energetic body it can cling to? You know, like Castaneda talks about the double. There seems to be some sort of almost form-like thing it can cling to. Like those purple lines, there's some sort of form, even though it's a very subtle form compared to the material growth that we know.
Are you talking about after it dies?
Yeah.
Then? Because I wasn't refuting that. What I was suggesting was that this would then match with the flyers as being these non-sentient.
Well, the death defiers.
Well, those are human beings who made a pact, according to Castaneda, with the inorganic beings, which are not the same as the flyers. Like this, well, yeah, who knows, right? There's a spectrum anyway, or different. Yeah. But anyway, the death defiers were humans who made a pact with whatever it was. But the flyers that you were describing as these machines sort of floating around, disembodied, without sentience, that could then be a match for the constructed identity that doesn't die. I mean, who knows? I mean, because it's possible that I mean, who knows what kind of stories those identities could create and then believe in, just as Streber's doing in life, and die into those stories. They may truly believe they come from a galaxy far, yeah, far away.
And they are inorganic realms, seem to be, to me, these matrixes where their souls are captured because they believe in a heaven or in a hell or wherever, and so... Because I experienced this on ayahuasca, I fell down into a cave with rotted babies that had got like a projection of the Dolce & Gabbana or Chanel signs, and they were all going like this, thinking that they were still alive, thinking that they were on stage, thinking that they were beautiful, and they were horrible. And it's as though from this I deduced tenuously that there's a hell dimension or an inorganic dimension for whatever you believe. And they've inserted it... The what?
The Bardo Realms.
Not heard of that.
Oh, that's Tibetan Book of the Dead. That's exactly that. That we create these matrices when we die based on our belief. And of course, if there's collective shared belief, then yeah, they can be for lots of different consciousnesses.
And so what? It's like the belly of these inorganic things. Then they're inside the guts of it, thinking that they're in heaven or thinking that they're in a fairy paradise or in the Everlands or, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All of these different, and they all seem to enclose the earth as though that, I mean, people call it the fourth dimension. It's not. It's a completely separate bubble dimension to the dimensional waveform or whatever that does exist. The natural one. It's sort of like a cancer, a tumor, a cul-de-sac. It's got nothing to do with ascension or descension. It's just. Well, it is dissension, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know.
So, the mind, you know, let's say the mind is its own place, can make of a heaven of a hell and a hell of a heaven, all of that. It's the prison. The mind is the prison, as you know, from your own experience. And then if the mind then becomes... this autonomous fragment that survives death, then, and gets together with other minds, it can then create prisons out of those minds.
In which to ensnare other.
Yeah. So it perpetuates that imprisonment. But it's not really a problem for the psyche or for consciousness itself, because consciousness can't actually be imprisoned.
But would consciousness be there? I mean, I know that this is very hard to language, but if it's not got sentience, how can consciousness be in it? Although it's like the unconscious human being, not that I'm particularly conscious, but they don't realize that it's there. It is watching, I suppose. But if it's non-sentient and it's detached from consciousness, how can consciousness be in it? It's where consciousness is not, even though it's still part of the all.
Right. Well, that's a good question. How can the ego experience itself as sentient? I mean, you can't tell somebody in the ego that they're not sentient. They have thoughts, right?
Feelings.
And feelings.
Consciousness, awareness is still there. It's still observing everything, totally unknown to the person. I have experienced that too. You know, I suddenly thought, oh my God, I am. I'm consciousness. And everything's consciousness. I'm like, you know, and it was a real shock.
Mm-hmm.
To suddenly realize I'm not my thoughts, I'm not my body, I'm not my emotions, I'm not anything.
Right. So that's what I mean, is it's not a problem. And it becomes a problem if we think that in order to become consciousness, we need to go through these various stages and steps to become consciousness. Because A, it's not true, and B, those steps and stages are what have been built by mind as this prison for consciousness.
Yeah.
In order that it can experience itself as sentient.
Which you can do at any moment.
Yeah, but the mind can't. The mind can't ever.
No, the mind can never.
Because it's a device. It's a tool.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be sentient. Yeah. It's supposed to be used by sentience.
Calculator.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those mysteries that only gets solved by direct experience of it. I mean, as you say, when you experience yourself as consciousness, then you know that what you thought was consciousness wasn't.
Yeah. There does seem to be a problem to me. I can't quite get over that hurdle that this world isn't a fucking problem.
Sure.
I mean, it isn't on a zoomed out level. I get it, sure. But the suffering, really? Does it have to be like this? No, I just don't believe it does. I mean, obviously it does because it is, but I can certainly see it could be better. I like the way you describe it. It's an abomination. It's an absolute abomination. I have to talk myself into staying on this godforsaken earth.
Yes, well, it's being willing to see the abomination without being triggered by it. That's the way that things change. So... But to see an abomination that as not a problem.
Yeah, I find it hard.
It's not, you know, there are people who say it's an abomination and it's a problem, and then there's people who say it's no problem and it's not an abomination. But there's not many people who say it's an abomination, but it's not a problem.
And it's not a problem. But it feels like a cop-out to say it's not a problem. No, I don't need to worry about it. I'm just going to have a nice life. Now I'm conscious and awake and I can be all love and light. I just
feel the thing about a problem is it has to have a solution. If it doesn't have a solution, it's not a problem. And the problem that you're glimpsing and describing here does not have a solution. That is clear. It is beyond the scope of human comprehension.
Absolutely.
As a problem. Right?
Yeah.
It's a problem for God. So apparently, but if you're God, you don't have problems, right? By definition,
God has problems.
Huh?
Unless you wanted problems.
Yeah, unless he wants to create one. I think I'll create Satan now. Just have a bit of fun.
Oh God! I did get the feeling it was going to be all right. You know, the world. It was going to be all right. I don't know how, with Fukushima pumping out God knows how much radioactivity by the day. I don't really know how, but there was a definite message that, no, don't worry, consciousness can change it. Spirit can just change it. It'll just change into something else.
Well, more pertinently, it doesn't change consciousness. None of this changes consciousness. Not in its fundamental quality. It might provide more for it to experience or process, or you know, but it doesn't change the constitution of consciousness, because nothing can change that. Anything that can be changed is not eternal.
Mm.
And anything that's not eternal is not a problem.
It isn't really real, is it? Sort of temporary dream, waking dream.
Thank you.
the first conversation I had with Mari. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Not sure I've ever used her name. We had another conversation the following day, I believe it was, and that will probably be part two coming Wednesday, the whatever it is, 2nd of March. We're already moving into March. I think I mentioned recently that I was running short of gas, but I think I also mentioned that I was enjoying and finding as a more fruitful talking to listeners and readers for the podcast as people out there in the world whose work interests me. And I guess, although there haven't been people banging down my door to be on the podcast, there definitely seems to have been an increase in interest in my work, or increase in my own awareness of that interest, and along with it a growing sense of just how interesting you are, my readers and listeners. I did say to Mari, I don't know if it made it on the podcast, it must have done, or the next one, that I've been feeling very much like I've been getting validation from the world, capital T, capital W. But in actual fact, barring one or two cases which perhaps I can't or won't speak about, it hasn't been from anywhere one of standing, or doesn't have to do particularly with getting more traffic or more recognition from the establishment or figures within the establishment, but more to do with an awareness of the kind of listeners and readers who are interested in my work, the kind of people, and just how remarkable they are. So I think I did already say this, but yeah, I mean, the people on the margins are way more interested than people in the mainstream, and I'm not just talking about the creative people on the margins now, but just people may not even be creating, they would just be participating in what I'm doing just by receiving it. But I'm beginning to know who you are, and definitely want to speak to you more. And I think that this podcast is going to evolve into deeper areas by doing so. So rather than going wider, more far-reaching, it's going to go deeper, and maybe that will also correspond with reaching more people. But if so, it will just be a happy side effect, I think. There were just a few points I wanted to make. Well, that was one of them. The other was my piece on The Supernatural by Jeffrey Kripal and Whitley Strieber, which will probably be at the blog and also at disinfo.com later, I guess, on Saturday, corresponding with this podcast, but I'm not 100% sure. Thing is I wrote it and I submitted it to Reality Sandwich, where I've written before, and checked with the person who I generally deal with there to make sure that he was interested and that he would get to it quickly, because I didn't want to sit on it. And he was very enthusiastic and promised to prioritize it, but then I didn't hear from him after a full working week, and so I sent an email to remind him or ask him, and he ignored that, and it's just complete silence. So I then went to the top, which was Pinchbeck, and asked if he was interested, and he long story short, I sent it to another editor at Reality Sandwich, who has not responded either in a full week. So, and of course, Jeffrey Kripal has written for Reality Sandwich, as has Mitch Horowitz, the editor of The Supernatural. So I have a feeling that I'm being stonewalled, and that, of course, is somewhat validating, but also quite annoying. I did want to make a bit more of a splash with this one, simply because when the signal is as strong, or the noise, I should say, is as strong as Kripal and Strieber's noise, then I want my signal to be that much stronger, if possible, to get heard above that noise. But anyway, it is what it is, and that's what it is, and it means I'm going to post it at my blog if I don't hear from Reality Sandwich by Saturday. The other thing is that disinfo.com ran a piece promoting Satanism 3 days ago, so I have written a response to that, which I will submit to them probably today, and I don't know if I'll continue writing at disinfo.com. Not that I'm getting on my moral high horse, but really I have to be discerning about what the context that my contributions are being received in, that my communications are being couched in, and if the context is a satanic promotional site, not of course they suddenly become that, but I mean really some discernment please folks. Anyway, I may continue if they run my riposte, and depending on the response to it, because of course one can't judge a barrel of apples by one single putrid sample. It just means all the other apples are probably on their way there. Anyway, so that was that. I think I pretty much said it all, really, that I had to say. We didn't hear from Stuart Davis. He got ill, and then he hasn't got back to me, and to be honest, I'm okay about that. I feel that Stuart is not really quite deep enough for this podcast. Sorry, Stuart, if you hear this, probably not going to hear it, but that comedic glibness is, I think it would be a difficult fit. But anyway, if I do hear from him, so will you. Patrick Harper, he begged off too, not for illness, but for undivulged circumstances. I got the feeling that he didn't like the general kind of thrust of my inquiry once I kept kind of reminding him of it through my emails, that I am definitely looking at the dark side of the imagination, the misuse of the imagination, and the ways in which our imagination has been hijacked and co-opted rather than it just being this wonderful poetic artistic solution to all our problems. But I may be entirely wrong. Anyway, he's not going to do the podcast, which is unfortunate. But again, as I say, I think that the world that I'm connecting to and who's beginning to recognize me is very much a hidden world, and there's going to be very few known agents who are going to be in it or join or enter into it. But there will be a few, so if you've got any suggestions, well, by all means, keep them coming. And this has been actually a 10-minute outro. Funny how I feel like I'm overstaying my welcome when it's just me. Like, who would want to listen to just me? Well, because there's no one here. It's just a microphone. It's like an empty forest. I can't hear my soul when I'm alone so easily. But you are out there, you will be, you are now, and you will be hearing this, and thank you for receiving this signal. Keep the echo coming. Oh, and thanks to my donators, which I will get to. I'd like to thank the regular donators who are making monthly donations. That's Stephen, Chris, Mark, and Elizabeth, and one-time donators Mike and Dean. As you know, if you listen to my podcast with David Costanza, I'm now in the second-hand business, which is good for everyone, I think. It means that I have less time, but not so that I won't be able to continue doing the podcast. It does mean that there's less pressure to pummel you for donations. Although, of course, they do mean a lot to me, nonetheless, and every little bit counts. Alright, that's the end of that. Until next time, be liminal if you want to.